Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 50 of Allied Strategies. My name is Tristan. Joining me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Neil.
Hey.
Congratulations on making it to 50 episodes with me without missing a single episode.
I was going to shout out 50 a bunch after you said that, but I didn't want to interrupt you. So, congratulations to you two as well. Do you think we should congratulate Ben about it?
Well, in fact, this is the third episode that Ben has missed, which, you know, really calls into question his commitment to this podcast.
So. Yeah, he's off the team. Three strikes, you're out.
Yep, we've replaced him now with Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch champion, JC Tao. Who JC, is that how you'd like to be addressed, JC Tao? Is that
just the second part will be fine? But hello, everyone.
Hello. So glad to have you with us. You are, of course, Southern California-based and therefore not in our immediate...
Seattle-based, right?
Seattle-based. Oh.
Tristan got his wrong intel.
Listen, you're friends with the SoCal people.
The important part is he's West Bowl. So.
Yeah, of the East-West Bowl conglomerate, you are a member of the West half. You've got the blue hoodie rather than the red hoodie, so... Glad to have you with us. Thanks again for joining us. And yeah, this week we're going to be talking with JC a little bit about his story, how he became a Magic player, how he became a great Magic player, how he and Ben developed a deck that destroyed a Pro Tour, and then, you know, JC won the Pro Tour, and Ben managed to get a nice little 9-7 record, prick up that extra Pro point. So, Ben, if you're listening, congratulations, buddy. Glad you could do it. And then we'll finish off with some modern discussion. We're going to talk a little bit about Grand Prix Los Angeles, which all three of us will be attending, so feel free to say hi if you see us there. But first, as you all know, we have to start off with Card of the Week. And I will begin because the order is arbitrary. My Card of the Week is Scavenging Ooze, which is, of course, one and a green for a 2-2, probably an ooze of some sort, I'm not really sure. And you can pay a green mana to exile a card from a graveyard, and then if it was a creature card, Scavenging Ooze gets a counter, and you get a life. A +1/+1 counter, that is. So, Scavenging Ooze is a card I've been playing some Modern recently, and I was playing Dredge, this graveyard-based strategy, and then I played up against Scavenging Ooze. I played a couple decks that had, like, four in the main deck, and just could not ever beat those decks, which was really, really frustrating. And then I played against a couple other decks that boarded in, you know, up from one to, like, three, which also was unbeatable. So then I decided I'd play a different Modern deck to test it out for a while, so I played Burn. And then I was playing Burn, and I played up against a deck that had four Scavenging Oozes in it, and I could never, ever win. So I've decided that Scavenging Ooze is just the best card in Modern, so I might try and play some of those in GPLA, because none of the decks that I've tested so far, which admittedly are only two, can ever beat it. So just does everything, right? It gets to be a huge creature, and it gains you life, so Burn can't beat it, and it kills your graveyard, so Dredge can't beat it. So would recommend, if you're playing green, you know, pack a couple of those guys to beat those decks, and that's my card of the week. JC, what is your card of the week?
All right, my card of the week is Grips Boon. It is from Shadows over Innistrad. It's uncommon, white enchantment for one. It gives enchanted creature +1/+1 flying, and you can bring it back from the graveyard for the low cost of 3 colorless and 1 white. When the spoiler list was first revealed, I had marked this down as the best white uncommon / common card, and to this day my teammates will not let me live down this tragic mis-evaluation of the card. But my thinking was at the time that this sort of repeatable effect is what carries, is almost a bomb-like effect in Limited. And once you have it going, you can somehow, it lets you steal games that you normally wouldn't. Unlike, you know, one of the other premier removals such as Bound in Moonsilver or such. So, yeah. My only vindication is that the card is quite good in constructed. So.
Well, it's also just broken in Limited.
It is not a bad card, really smart. Yeah.
It's probably the second best white uncommon. I mean, the lifelinky guy is pretty good.
Near his chaplain?
That one.
Yeah, that card kind of disappointed me, actually. I thought it was going to be better than it was.
I think this card's probably better than that.
Yeah, I would be prepared to agree with that. I do think, though, that Bound by Moonsilver is better than Grips Boon.
Yeah, we're all on that train.
Have you come around on Bound by Moonsilver? Great. I think that Grips Boon is actually an insane card in Standard, though. It's kind of ridiculous there. It's kind of just, I don't know. When I saw the card, I compared it a lot to Kite Sail, but it plays quite a bit better than Kite Sail, given that it only costs one for the first go, Mm-hmm. That's particularly relevant in Standard, where there are decks that do not have more than one mana for much of the game.
One time I was playing Sealed, and my opponent went, turn two, Lamphold Pacifist, turn three, Griffspoon, plus Obsessive Skinner, attack you for five. The game was over. I'm like, okay. That's, you've got a dragon attacking on turn three.
Basically Ornithopter and Soul Artifact that he's got constructed over there.
Yeah, just all three cards are good, though.
Yeah.
So that was a beating.
I do remember that was the first time I was at Chipotle with Ben and my buddy Sam, and we were just, you know, standing in line and going through the best commons and uncommons of each color, because this was right, you know, as the set spoiler had been out, and he was like, yeah, everybody agrees on white except for JC. We all have Bound by Moonsilver, and JC has Griff's Boon up there and Bound by Moonsilver, you know, like five further down.
I think someone else on our team had Throttle as the best black common or uncommon.
Yeah,
so
I thought that was more
you're in good
egregious.
Company, JC. I forget who that was, but...
You know, that was... although...
That's just more egregious.
I think that, like, removal in this set, actually, Unlimited, is a really interesting discussion because, you know, there are some people that try to play zero copies of cards like Reduced to Ashes, and there are some people that will play as many as they can get, up to, like, three or whatever. So people definitely still have different opinions about how much, you know, clunky, expensive removal to play. Neil, what do you think about that? How many pieces of removal?
I usually play anywhere from zero to two, like
Reduced to Ashes type cards.
I do not mind putting those in my deck. I think they're pretty serviceable, especially if you're attacking. I don't think Reduced to Ashes is a card that I really want to be playing when I'm blocking. But like in the blue-red spells deck, like having a way to kill a big creature is good, you know. So. And the fact that it's an actual spell in that deck instead of Sleep Paralysis is a pretty big upside.
JC, how about you? What do you think about like clunky removal in Shadows Limited?
I'm generally actually not a fan of expensive removal. I think Magic's gotten to the point where you're better served by trying to out-tempo your opponent. But with that said, I do think it's got a spot in decks such as Blue-Red Spells, where it just does everything it wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean, Neil's willing to play pieces of the puzzle in blue-red spells, so really we'll take anything we can get.
So am I, actually.
Yes!
Oh, no.
Oh, my God, I'm just one step closer to being a Pro Tour champion. All right. It's not deviating any further. My card of the week is a doozy. It's Reality Acid. Tristan asked me before we started the podcast if this was a Magic card.
Well, okay. Yes. In my defense, first off, I asked, why is my card of the week Reality Acid? Because Neil had typed it there, so...
I wanted to give him the opportunity to discuss this excellent Magic card. This card is from Planar Chaos. We're adding Future Sight basically as we speak to the flashback draft this week. But Planar Chaos added Reality Acid to the format. So it's two and a blue for an enchantment aura. Enchant permanent. It has Vanishing 3. So what that says is this permanent enters the battlefield with three time counters on it. At the beginning of your upkeep, remove a time counter from it. And when the last is removed, sacrifice it. So it's just in play for three turns, and then it goes away. When Reality Acid leaves the battlefield, Enchanted Permanent's controller sacrifices it. So basically, a lot of text to say, you put this on something, and then three turns later, both things die. That's how it works. But there is a 1/3... flying blue creature for four mana. You can pay blue, tap it, and sacrifice, or sorry, pay blue, tap it, and discard a card from your hand to bounce a permanent that you controlled back to your hand. It's called Talarian Sentinel. So that one's from Time Spiral. So if you combine these two cards together, every turn you can spend four mana to just vindicate any permanent. And also discard a card from your hand. So you're like, oh, this card's bad. Okay, I'll kill that thing. And you just start mowing down all your opponent's best permanents. And then you also have the Talarian Sentinel, which is bouncing back your repeatable effects, like Fathom Seers. So then you're drawing extra cards and bouncing more islands to your hands, which are then fuel fodder to keep the Reality Acid chaining going. And it's just the most fun. So the main point behind this whole spiel is that this card's really weird, and it works in very strange ways with cards in Time Spiral. But, like, that's the whole fun of that set, is that a bunch of the cards do really, really goofy things, but then they can combine in strange ways with other cards to create incredibly powerful effects within the context of that limited format. So, if you're, like, you know, new to drafting, new to Magic, Time Spiral block makes no sense and was probably a design mistake because it's too complicated. But even for people who are playing the game forever, like when you read these cards and they just don't seem to do anything, like just think about them in all these like crazy contexts, and sometimes you'll realize like, oh, they can actually do like this weird combination of things. So yeah, Time Spiral is sweet. You should all draft it. Last week you can, and try to open Tarmogoyf.
Is it correct that you start with Time Spiral and then you draft Planar Chaos, and then once Future Sight's added, you'll draft Future Sight third?
Yeah, so you'll know if you have the Tolarian Sentinel to set up this combo. So how, Reality Acid as a card is really bad.
How much higher as a pick is Tolarian Sentinel when you add the pack of Planar Chaos?
Well, Tolarian Sentinel used to be one of the best blue commons, actually, but that's because damage stacked, so you should always play it. But it goes up quite a bit now, right?
On the expectation of the Reality Acid, yeah.
Exactly, so it's pretty sweet.
That is really sweet, yeah.
I guess I don't have it as my card of the week, but another thing you can do is that I actually pulled off in draft is Momentary Blink, and that card's more well-known, of course. It basically just blinks a creature for 2 mana, and you can flashback it for 4 mana. It works incredibly well with Morse, because you can basically just cheat on your mana costs. It's like you can morph something that unmorph like 7 mana, but you just blink your morph on turn 4, and now you just have like an 8-drop in play or whatever, 7 or 8-drop. So that's another cool example of something you can do.
That's one of my favorite things to do in Cube is flicker Exalted Angel as a morph with Restoration Angel to, you know, simultaneously cheat on mana with the morph and also flicker your angel with a Resto Angel, which,
yeah, exactly.
You know,
it's a flavor fail.
You're just demolishing the system there.
I like it.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to, again, skip on doing achievement-related stuff this week because we were waiting for Ben to get back because that's Ben's favorite thing in the whole world, and we wouldn't want to do that without him. So we're going to move in now to our main segment where we're going to speak with JC about his Magic life and career and everything. So JC, when did you start playing Magic the Gathering?
Well, I played almost 20 years ago, I think. It was sometime between 5th edition and 6th edition is when I picked up the cards. I remember there being a massive rules change, which didn't affect me at all because we were all playing Kitchen Magic at the time.
Yeah, it's a very common story. I think Neil started in much the same way as well. Is that right, Neil?
Pretty much. Did you buy those like 5th and 6th edition like big old starter pack
starter
things,
yeah,
right?
Basically giants.
I bought those, and then I always opened up the it was a 5/6 flyer for 5 and blue. And when it attacks, your opponent gets to draw 2 cards. I was so excited. I'm like, this thing's enormous. It's so good. Anyways, so that times have changed.
Yeah. We were just playing for fun back in the day. And eventually I moved down and actually took a break. This was around Urza's Destiny, I believe, when they were printing a bunch of cards, which I, upon viewing, immediately decried them as being outrageously broken and just not going to play. I think Rancor was one of those cards. One of my friends brought that card into our games one day, and we just could never beat it.
That card was on eBay's list of top 10 most powerful Magic cards. It was second.
There you go.
Yeah, that list contained a couple of cards that many people who knew Magic cards did not agree with being on there, but Rancor is certainly a powerful one. So you took a break. Then when did you come back?
I came back during college. So this was, I think, Onslaught. And some of my college friends at the time invited me to draft. And I had never done this, but I was immediately hooked. And we would just draft at the house 2-3 times a night. And we continued doing this throughout my college days. And it sort of died down a little bit after, you know, a bunch of us graduated and moved out. But yeah, and then I just never stopped after.
So when did you play in your first Grand Prix?
Gosh, I think one of my friends dragged me on a car ride from Seattle down to Oakland for a GP when I was about 14 or 15.
It's probably dubbed as GP San Francisco.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was. I have no memory of this except that we just drove for a day and a half.
Quite a long time ago then.
Yeah. And then that was obviously just for fun, but I came back and started doing grinding GPs more recently, about 5 years ago, and I've sort of been ramping up slowly on my attendance rates throughout the years.
So when did you queue for your first Pro Tour?
I queued 2 years ago through actually online Moto PTQ. This is for the modern PT Fate Reforged.
That was my first Pro Tour as well. Wow. It was also my only Pro Tour, and you've done a little bit better since then, so...
Just slightly.
did you get on the train immediately, or did you have to queue up again a couple times?
No, that was actually my first constructed tournament in my career. So I tried the best I could. I didn't want to play any of the known decks, thinking that since I'm very new to playing constructed, any deck I play... any of the top tier decks I play, I would just get severely outplayed by my opponents. So I ended up playing black-white tokens, and I did very mediocre. I think I finished 5-5 in constructed. Did not re-queue, and won a sealed... a sealed RPTQ in the following season to skip two PTs and then get back on again.
So that was then of course Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch was in the near future after that.
Right, yeah. So I did not re-queue on that PT either, so I had to win a modern RPTQ.
Brittle.
To qualify for the Gatewatch one.
And then how did you get involved with East West Bowl?
We were testing I knew, like you said at the beginning of the show, I knew a bunch of the South California guys, Eugene Huang, Andrew Brown, and some of that crew. They invited me to test with Ben, Eric, and I think a couple of the other guys from SoCal, and Scott Lip from the kind of the Central America region for Milwaukee. And we sort of formed a relationship over the testing period that. And when most of us re-queued for Oath of the Gatewatch in Atlanta, we just sort of formed the team, mostly automatically.
So then in the testing for Pro Tour Oath, was that you and Ben that were working on the Eldrazi deck, the blue-red Eldrazi deck?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, for Modern, I think it's a format where everyone has their pet decks, so it's hard to get more than two or three people working on the same deck. And Ben and I just happen to really enjoy playing aggressive creatures and turning them sideways.
So going into the Pro Tour, how good did you think your deck was? Like before you played your first round of Modern,
honestly,
you think you had it?
We had no idea. We thought it was either going to be very good or just average. We didn't think it was a terrible deck. We wouldn't have played it, obviously, but we didn't know how powerful it was going to be until we sat down and played the first couple of rounds.
And then everyone died.
Yeah. So how long until that tournament before you knew you were, like, live to top 8 this thing?
So I finished 8-0 on day one, and I was feeling great. And day two... the wheels came off a little bit, and I had 0-3'd my draft. And generally, you need an X3 record to top 8. So at that point, my back was against the wall, and I pretty much had to win out to have any chances. And unfortunately, I succeeded in doing so all the way until the last round. And unfortunately, I lost to Shuhei, who was playing for both tiebreakers and presumably to kick out.
Right, they were trying to dream crush you. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think any of those China Fireball people wanted to see this deck in the top 8.
Very understandable. Yeah, do you have any ill will towards those guys for that, or would you have done the same thing if you were in their spot?
I think I would have done the same thing, so no, I have no ill will whatsoever. I don't think it's ever should ever be an issue if someone...
Are you ever going to forget that match, though? Are you going to ever forget that match?
No, it's a fine game. He played very well, I have to say.
It's good. Shuhei's a master.
Oh, yeah. Shuhei's just a great Magic player and a person as well.
He even expanded his range that tournament because I don't think there were any 3/5s in his deck. everything basically its worst stats. So
is Shuhei known for playing 3/5s?
Oh yeah. Well, more unlimited. He loves a good 3/5. Like Twins of Mara State is just so unbelievably good on the Shuhei scale because it's just a 3/5 and has another ability.
So he's a Great Horn Krushok aficionado.
He just had it right this whole time, though. 3/5s just block really well and attack really well. They're just so good.
So okay,
they
so
always cost 5.
So
sorry. So, anyways.
Okay. Yeah. So 3/5s. Yeah. 3/5s are great. And one thing that can be a 3/5 is Vile Aggregate, which was in your deck. So that is how Neil was relating that to the story.
To bring it back, yeah.
To bring it back.
Well, I did have to fight it out after he defeated me in the last round.
Yeah, so you lost last round. You were X4. Do you know how good, like, did you know how good your tiebreakers would be? Do you know, like, what place you were expecting to get after if you had lost that round? Or were you just trying to win?
I think I was either going to be, anywhere between 8th and 10th.
So you were an underdog then to make it. You thought?
At the time, yes.
So you snuck in it. Was it 8th?
I think so. I don't quite remember.
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah.
And then who did you play in the top 8? Was it...
rematch against Shuhei, as he turns out.
How did that feel, knowing that he'd beaten you the day before?
Not good. Looking at the matchup on paper, I thought our deck is favored, but he just demolished me in the actual match that we played, so I was a little bit uncertain actually on day 2 or on the Sunday.
And then of course you ended up beating Shuhei. You beat 3 Team Channel Fireball people, right? People with the CFB deck at least to win that tournament.
Yeah, the bracket fell very much in my favor, and as I was more playing the deck every round, I was getting more and more comfortable with the lines of play and what I should be doing. So just very lucky with the matchups.
And then you realized that you just wanted to be, you know, when you were on the draw, you really wanted the Gemstone Caverns in your hand. So you figured that one out.
Yeah, I prayed very hard to the magic gods and worked out.
I have to say that was just great. The last game, you're just sitting there and you're like, yep, got lucky. And you just, put that into play and just, here's a flurry of Eldrazi. It was just the perfect, cap to in that tournament. So. Nice to watch.
Have you ever played an SCG like Invitational?
I have not.
Okay, if you were to play one, would you consider making it, and then you won, would you consider making your token, because of course everybody who wins an SCG Invitational gets to make a token, would you consider making yours a luck counter?
Ooh, yes. That's a good idea.
I think that would be just perfect. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure nobody has one of those yet. So keep that in mind when you win the next SCG Invitational that you play in, which... I assume it's something that you don't really plan to do since you're West Coast located and SCG doesn't really have tournaments over here. But
but maybe.
You never know.
Yeah, if it happens.
Okay, so that was obviously East-West Bowl's first tournament as a team. So it was quite successful, I would say, on the scale of how things can go for you guys. How involved were you then with East-West Bowl going forward from that Pro Tour?
We were definitely became more tight-knit as a team afterwards. I mean, we put 3 people from the team into the top 8, myself, Andrew Brown playing the same deck, and Pascal Maynard playing Infinity. And that kind of dominance doesn't happen too often, I would say, especially when we're piloting two of the decks in the top 8 were relatively unknown, as well as the pilots. So... afterwards, we definitely wanted to repeat the performance and work hard together to sort of become more collaborative. One of the many regrets that our teammates had was that they were not they didn't play our deck basically.
Yeah, how do you explain having such a broken deck and not having the majority of your team playing it?
Well, like I said, our part is just we just honestly didn't know how good the deck is, and we didn't want to try to sell all of our other teammates' Pro Tour hopes on a deck that's so unfamiliar.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. It's the kind of deck that you really have to put in a bunch of games yourself to know that casting a turn 2 Thought Knotseer is just broken in Modern, or turn 3 Reality Smasher. But if you're just looking on paper, you'd be asking questions like, how often do I actually get those kind of hands? How often is the deck going to operate at full steam?
So that was, of course, a whole Pro Tour has happened since then, which was Pro Tour Shadows over Innistrad. How did that one go for East West Bowl? And what did you play?
So I played the team deck, which was Esper Planeswalker's Control. This is a deck that Andrew and actually Neil sort of worked on together in the weeks leading up, and it was designed to prey on both the Bant Coco company decks, as well as the sort of decks that would try to either go under Bant, like white mini, or other bigger creature decks.
And how did that end up working out for you? How did you do in Pro Tour Shadows over Innistrad?
I went 6-4 with a deck, which is not great, but I enjoy playing the deck. I think there is a lot of room for improvement. I just haven't played this kind of control deck before, so I enjoy both playing the deck and learning how to play the deck.
So would it be fair to say that the only thing that really changed about East West Bowl was that we added Neil to the team, and then it went from being a dominant top 8 squad to a fairly lackluster performance?
Yeah, actually, if you put it that way, I think.
Neil, all right, any comments?
I'll take my leave.
So that was you. That was the weekend after you top 8ed your first Grand Prix, though, right? That was at Albuquerque.
Oh yes, yeah.
How did you make the decision to go to Albuquerque, given that you didn't need the points or anything, and you already had your world slots? Was it just for fun, or did you?
Yeah, I would just never miss a limited GP if I could make it.
You're so smart.
Yeah, man after my
Can
own
we just
heart.
Replace Ben? I'm in.
I'd be willing to as well, yeah.
So you listened to the whole last episode, JC?
I did.
And you think Twitter Giant is at least passable as a format?
It is passable. I'm not in love with it, but I'm also not going to disparage it.
That's like seven steps above where Ben is, so welcome aboard. okay, so what are your Magic-related plans for the future? Obviously, you've got a Worlds tournament and your Platinum for the next year. Or do you have anything specific that you wish to accomplish, obviously, besides, winning Worlds, winning another PT?
It really depends on my Worlds performance. If I do relatively well, then I'm going to try a little bit harder to hit all the GPs, even, the constructed ones, which I'm not super in love with yet. But if I pull a Reduke in his first Worlds, then I might take a step back and focus a little bit more on work, because I've really been taking a lot of time off from work this current year in order to go to attend all those GPs and PTs.
What is it that you do for your work?
I am an accountant at a law firm up in Seattle.
I'm
pretty much the accountant, so taking week or 2 week off every quarter is difficult for them.
Certainly sounds like a challenge. Okay, Neil, do you have any fun questions for JC before we move on to Grand Prix Los Angeles discussion? When did you first
meet
JC? No,
you covered pretty well.
Obviously,
honestly,
I'm a great interviewer, but no big deal. All right, we can move on then.
JC, what's your favorite Magic card?
Ooh, nice.
Ooh, whenever people ask me that question, the default answer is always Raging Goblin.
Raging Goblin?
Yes.
Okay, you got to go a little bit. You just really like attacking?
I think most players are too afraid to attack. And if you give them this kind of card, it just basically tells them that you should be attacking. They will learn to play, they'll just enjoy the game a lot more.
And how much do you like the card Lava Axe?
Not very much.
Wow, it's just a strict upgrade to Ben.
Ben loves a good lava axe.
Ben is a lava axe aficionado.
I'm not even kidding. He just Ben's.
I don't believe this.
Ben's biggest claim to fame on the podcast is how much he loves lava axe.
He's
to be fair.
His line is any excuse to play a lava axe that isn't playing the card lava axe.
Yeah.
And any card that has a lava axe mode, I think, is his would be the the fair way of analyzing it.
So lava shriek, Lightning Shrieker is just a strict upgrade, and
oh yeah,
he loves Incendiary Command. You know, sometimes it does some things, but mostly just get him for four.
Yeah. Okay. I'll have to confirm with him when he gets back.
But I'm going to... You know what? Next week, we'll ask Ben what he thinks of Raging Goblin.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
We'll just... It'll be great. We'll be like, how was your trip away, you know, from the podcast? Did you miss us? He'll be like, yeah, not really. We'll be like, what do you think of Raging Goblin? He's like, I don't know. That card kind of stinks. We'll be like, all right. I'm going to call up JC.
Yeah. Also, we're not recording the podcast right now. This is actually a different sort of meeting.
Anyways.
Okay, so JC, would that be your like advice for a, you know, somebody that was trying to get better at Magic? Would it be, you know, attack more, or do you have any other, you know, words of wisdom if they were asking, you know, everybody to put a couple sentences in for new players to, you know, who wanted to get better at Magic, what would you add to the book?
I mean, a lot of it is fairly obvious. You gotta put in the time, gotta put in the effort, and I think just as important as all that is just having a solid network of friends who also have the same goals as you. Whether it is to just enjoy playing Magic at the local level, or band together and travel to short distance GPs or SCGs or whatever, or to have the ultimate goal of qualifying for the Pro Tour. Your goals should be aligned with those people you play with.
I think that's an excellent piece of advice. That's one of the things that I've noticed actually about the Magic players I know that are, you know, really having a great time and doing well, is that they have a group of friends around them that are doing the same sorts of things. So, yeah, definitely would agree with that.
Oh, yeah. And obviously those friends would be more along the lines of supporting each other rather than, you know, dragging each other down to, you know,
yeah,
positivity rather than...
We would never, you know, say mean things about such friends while they're not on the podcast or anything like that. Okay, so let's quickly talk then about Grand Prix Los Angeles, which, of course, is in the very, very near future. It's, of course, a modern Grand Prix. JC, do you know what you're going to be playing in that GP, possibly, given that you're, of course, no longer allowed to play Eye of Ugin?
I'm 90% sure that I have a deck. We are furiously working on tuning the last 10-15 cards of it, but I'm pretty sure I'm locked on the deck.
All right, yeah. Well, we can, of course, this episode's going to come out on Thursday, so definitely don't want to give out any spoilers, since I assume the deck has some super secret tech involved, or even if it doesn't, we might want people to think it does. So
it's pretty fancy.
If you win the GP, or if somebody on East West Bowl does, we'll try and have them on to talk about it next week. But yeah, hopefully that works out well. What have you been testing? Any other like known decks?
Like most people, we tried to test Nahiri as soon as it became an L-Factor. We probably spent 2 or 3 days trying out various configurations with her. You know, Jeskai, Grixis, Junk, Splashing White, 5-color, just everything. And she's very good. She is definitely modern playable.
Neil, how about you? What do you...
She did CG.
I might be pulling JC's deck, or there's actually another team deck that we're working on, which is a little bit more well known, but it's not quite fully well known, or I'm just going to play Infect. So I'm on one of those three decks. I don't know which yet.
All right. Yeah. For me, it's, probably not Dredge, although that was a really fun deck to mess around with. It's going to be, probably Burn or Abzan Company. But it seems like Abzan Company is maybe a loose one. So might just sleeve up Burn again, like I did for Grand Prix Charlotte last year. Hope for a somewhat better result. I was thinking about it, you know, the Grand Prix Charlotte last year was a modern GP, and I wonder how many people attended GP Charlotte last year and are going to attend GP LA this year. That number's got to be fairly small, right?
Yeah.
I know, because I know Patrick Chapin is going to be one of those people. I know I'm going to be one of those people. I think, is Eric going to LA?
I assume anyone on the West Coast, if they're going to one of them, is just going to go to LA.
Going to go to LA, right? That's what do you think about this though? This trend of them putting, you know, multiple same format GPs on the same continent on the same weekend. Do you follow the Owen Turtenwald school of this sucks, or the most other people school of this is great?
It's definitely great.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think Owen.
And I agree with Owen on almost everything, but definitely not on this.
Yeah, I think it's also pretty great to get to play, you know, not have to travel so far.
I just want to go to Charlotte is the main answer. So the fact that it's here in LA, like, I don't know. I just don't really care about modern that much. And, like, you know, a standard a little – I'd care about standard a little bit more than modern. Although right now, standard's in a weird place. But just – I'm sort of on the JC train of, like, constructed is so much worse than limited.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
They just have taken away all our limited GPs. So I don't know. I'm not really planning to go to quite as many Grand Prix in the future. But, you know, when one's in L.A. and I just –
Yeah,
I'm
back so close.
Tomorrow I'm going to drive down to see my parents, actually, for a couple days. And a bunch of my family is located in that area. So it's like I'll go see them for a day and a half and then go over to L.A. So it's going to be fun. So that makes it a lot more bearable when – it's close enough to be able to do something like that.
If only it was limited, though, yeah? That would be...
Obviously, that would be better, but... yeah.
So, JC,
there's always a Super Sunday series, you know?
Yeah. That's a pretty likely tournament that we'll have the opportunity to register
for. I did win myself a Magic Online PTQ qualification spot. So if I bomb out of Saturday, there's a chance I'm just going to play the Moto PTQ in LA on Sunday.
That's pretty great. So yeah, JC, what's your favorite limited format that you've played, since you've probably played quite a few in your, you know, long career of Magic, playing at least casually?
Yeah, this is a good question. I think my favorite one is probably Champion Betrayers of Kamigawa.
Champions, Betrayers. Wow, that's not a common answer, I don't think. So yeah, what did you like about that draft format?
I thought the creatures were all reasonably costed. You know, the overall power level was low enough that you had to make do with crappier cards. Nowadays, you know, there are some formats where the cards are just so powerful they sort of almost play themselves out. But in Champions, you sort of have to work a little bit harder to eke out advantage. And then the Ninjutsu ability was just fantastic. KO already unlimited. It just induces all sorts of bluffing lines and trying to read your opponent, you know, in addition to reading the board and just everything else.
So did you get the chance to play that when it was on Flashback Drafts at all?
I did. I played a lot of it.
That's, yeah.
Very nice.
Sounds,
did you open up any GTAs?
I did not, unfortunately.
Because I think Ben played one draft and then he opened a GTA. So Ben confirmed luckiest. So I would say, you know, your Pro Tour win was all skill. no one's ever won a Pro Tour and gotten lucky at all. And Ben was very lucky to 9-7. So heard it here first. I'm just kidding. Ben's great too.
Oh, man.
I can only make fun of him because I know he's not going to listen. But now if he does listen... Then it's just so. Actually, I don't know that he's not going to listen, but
part of me hopes he will, because you know we've really, you know, turned up the heat here.
The last few weeks.
Well, the thing is, you just gotta keep lowering the bar, right? And then we'll just see. Like, at some point, there's just going to be like a furious message from Ben on Facebook, and he's going to be like, "I can't believe you guys, you know, said such horrible things about me on the podcast."
Well,
like, okay, fine. Well, we won't go that far next time, butt in, and then we'll just, you know. Only go 95% of the way there.
One time when he missed gold, we were just you know, chatting with him about it, and somebody said something about missing gold, and he got really upset. So then I messaged him a link to the Gatherer page for Silver Inlaid Dagger.
Oh my god, which... that's absurd.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite all time Ben moments.
I think we told this story on the podcast already, but it was sort of. Just in tandem to another thing. But at this last Pro Tour, I was playing Paulo for day two, and I beat him, so I ended up going 4-4. And that was nice because I had lost my last four matches in a row, which was pretty miserable. I was 0-4 with the Esper deck. Nothing was really going my way. And so I was, you know, it was nice to be able to make day two after that. And a thing that Ben and I do oftentimes is, like, we troll each other, like, how are you doing kind of thing. Usually we say, like, you know, oh, I lost, and, you know, get a little sad about it and be like, ah, just kidding, I got there. And I didn't realize Ben was playing for, you know, day two as well. I thought he was doing better in the tournament. So I did this to him, but that he had actually missed day two. He lost his last round. So I did the normal thing. And then, you know, then he just, he had a not very nice word for me that I wouldn't share on the podcast. I felt so bad because I had like totally daggered him on accident. And that's when I knew, you know, that that's Ben's floor. You know, I don't go there because I don't want to be that mean to him.
Ben does get very, very sad immediately after losing a tournament.
But then I felt bad for him too, because so we have a local group, like a Facebook chat, where all the guys from out here in the Bay Area all kind of just, you know, talk trash to each other and also, you know, post funny GIFs or GIFs. I never remember how to say that word. And
yeah, we mostly just talk about affinity.
Yeah, exactly. Random things. And then day two, someone just like daggers Ben. And then and Ben's just in the chat. He's like, too soon, guys, too soon.
not only that, he says too soon, right? And then a couple of us, you know, just keep barreling on with the daggers. And he just left the chat for like a week because he was so sad.
So now they need to make a day two inlaid dagger for yeah. Kristen's gatherer linking.
Look, you know, I have been daggered many times by Ben about my inability to day two a Pro Tour, so I felt completely justified in returning fire a little bit.
Well, that was actually really smart of you, because then we just crushed a bunch of team drafts.
Yeah, that was, of course, Pro Tour Fate Reforged, where we were undefeated on Sunday, but not in the same way JC was at Pro Tour Oath.
Exactly.
We won, like, what, four or five team drafts against just some insane teams.
That was just one of the best... That was the Sundays one... ever. Literally, Jarvis would just not play with us anymore.
Ben's record was he lost two matches on the day, and neither of us lost a single match, and we just made fun of him for how hard he was to carry.
Wow.
That was...
I need to get better at team drafts.
Yeah.
You guys.
No, I think we might have ran well.
We had all luck, no skill, don't worry. We definitely also some, you know, mistakes in the team draft variety were made against us at, like, a couple times we just got past literal nut decks of different archetypes. This was Fate Reforged Cons, so all the like mana work and stuff was so there was so much involved in drafting a mana base that Neil, of course, you know, Neil and Neil's basically team drafting anytime he regularly drafts, you know, a Cons or fake Cons. So we had a lot of experience cobbling together horrific mana bases in that format just because of how often Neil does that when he doesn't have to. So I think that was where we got our edge.
My last little team draft comment was actually, I think that it was earlier that tournament because we were Gary Wise was at that tournament.
Yeah, we team drafted with him on day two. I did, obviously, while you were still playing, you know, the Pro Tour.
I don't know what team draft I was in with Gary, but we had like an 8-man, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And one of my teammates just passes. Gary and Ash Cloud Phoenix.
Right. Oh my
which
goodness.
Which is like inexcusable. We lose like three matches straight up for that card, right? We're just like, you can't ever beat it. And it's funny because in the same exact draft, I'm sitting above Gary. And so he's passing to me on right in pack two and just opens up his pack. And he's like, sorry, team. I'm, you know, we're going to lose a draft now, but I don't really care. And so I'm like, what absurd card is he going to pass me? Like, you know, I guess he's just taking like some uncommon he doesn't care about winning the draft. And he just passes me a Narset, the creature. And I'm just like, this is what you're worried about passing me? So that was a pretty funny one.
Right, of course, because he was there on a Hall of Fame invite and hadn't actually, you know, played with the set at all. So
yeah, he's just like, wow, this is not beatable. 3-2, first strike for six.
I think he probably came from an era of Magic when that was just a fine playable.
Obviously, but it's just so funny in contrast to the Ash Cloud Phoenix being passed to him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to his credit, he did pick that and shellack us with it.
Yeah.
That was a brutal team draft experience.
Yeah, I think it must have been that literally as he made the comment, too, because as I was saying, he passed to me in pack two.
Right.
So I think he made that comment and then was just immediately being passed the Ash Cloud Phoenix at the exact same moment. So it's just great.
Yeah. Man, JC, have you gotten to play many team drafts? Is that a format that you've gotten to mess around with?
No. I wish we did more of this, but unfortunately our team GP results have not been spectacular, despite having a pretty stacked team.
Right, of course.
Now, it just means that we need to work on, you know, ourselves as a team, but... Now, the most team draft experience I've had are around day two of PTs.
Right. That's definitely a pretty common experience, I think.
Excuse me. Day three of PTs.
Oh, yeah. That's also pretty common for me. You know, day two and day three are free, so that was, I guess, different experiences for different people. Okay, so let's see. Do we have anything else? Either you guys have anything you want to talk about before we wrap up the show here? I know Neil's feeling a little bit under the weather today, so we're not going to go on for too long. Although I think we're almost an hour.
I've been laughing just the same as normal because you people crack me up. So, yeah, no, not a little cold going to keep me down.
That was I was worried about you because you know you sent out a little message to our group that was like, I'm feeling quite sick, guys, a couple hours ago.
Well,
so
I ended up skipping streaming too because normally I do a Tuesday because we're recording on Tuesday. Normally I do like a Channel Fireball Tuesday stream, but I just took the afternoon sleeping and then felt well enough to podcast. So. Good times.
Well, how about why don't you tell us a nice little bedtime story and then you can get back to your sleeping or
exactly. That sounds great. All right. So this is brought to you by a tournament that I did okay in, but I would say JC did a little bit better. It was from Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch. So very timely. So this I think it's like round 15 or 16. We're coming to the end stretch. And I think I still have the chance to maybe 10-6.
So you were playing for something of a slightly different caliber than JC was at this time.
Exactly right. I think it was a couple rounds out, but you know, my tournament hadn't been going that well, and I ended up 8-8. Could have been 9-7, but no, I think it was 8-8. The classics. No, I definitely 9-7. I had a broken deck. So anyways, so you know, as good as Ben, I think. Right. So this story. I finally got a great matchup, got to play against Burn. And so, as a reminder, I was playing the Kalos Eldrazi deck that had main deck chalices, like chalice for one, just do a bunch of broken stuff. But I was on the mulligan, and my hand wasn't really that great, and I bottomed my card. But I had, like, a turn to Matter Reshaper that I thought was going to be reasonable. I just had, like a Simeon Spirit Guide, and a couple wastes and a Matter Reshaper. So anyways, sit down, and I'm on the mulligan, and my opponent's Mark Nestico, and he says, well, let me help you on mulligan. So he plays a Goblin Guide on turn one and attacks me and immediately just flips an Eldrazi Temple. Okay? So then I draw for my turn, and then I draw another Matter Reshaper, right? So I play a turn one Matter Reshaper off of the Simeon Spirit Guide and the Eldrazi Temple that he had flipped for me. And then he was a little bit bummed about that, but now he just can't attack. And then the next turn, I draw for my turn, and I just draw Eye of Ugin and just play Thought Knotseer. That was in my opening hand. So my opening hand went from like a turn two Matter Reshaper off of like waste with no chance of ever casting this Thought Knotseer in my hand into like just this absurd hand that can never lose. So I thought that was pretty funny. From zero to hero, Goblin Guide, my friend, normally the enemy, but
how did he take it?
Oh, he was very jovial about it. We had a good laugh. I don't think he quite realized the destruction that he had sowed, because you know, he can't see my hand. He knows I had the Eldrazi Temple that he flipped, of course, but didn't quite realize how disastrous things had turned for him. So it was a good time. And then I think I probably just chaliced him game two, you know.
Sounds like you were probably going to win game one anyways, right? You were going to draw step that Eldrazi Temple and then still play a turn
one Matter
Reshaper.
It was
going to
be fine, but
then, then you would play a turn two Matter Reshaper and a turn three Thought Knotseer if he hadn't Goblin Guided you.
Well, Tristan is disillusioned the entire story, but
I rate this story, you know, 3 out of 2 at best. Maybe it can aspire to flip up another permanent.
I do always flip threes off that card because I'm incredibly lucky. So, always flip threes with your Matter Reshaper. That's my advice.
Yep.
Put them right into play.
That is good advice.
And when you reshaper, you're just free rolling.
You're going infinite even. That's a certified infinite combo. You can say you can call over a judge.
I
demonstrated a loop.
Josh, can you shuffle my shuffle my deck just so that you know we perfectly place the matter shapers?
Yeah.
You know?
But
then it's the judge's fault that you're so lucky.
But that's definitely true. And of course, thanks to JC for being on our podcast this week. But
thank you guys so much for having me.
That's going to be the end of this week, so we'll see you guys next time when we talk more Allied Strategies. Oh, yeah, see? Basically no skill involved in this process at all.
Very well done with the sign-off there, Tristan.
Thank you. I tried.
You really grabbed the reins, and then you even entwined.
Yeah.